Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Well, hello there. I almost didn't see you. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Hey there!
Nice. You're going to get sued for that.
No, that's just the tune. They can't get me. I'm untouchable.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you know.
Don't take that as a challenge. Backtracking already. So today we're going to talk about it's interesting. We're going to talk about a company that, as Chris was saying before we started recording, a few months ago, we might call this like a eulogy for a company that is on its way to crumbling to pieces, but now there's actually a new hope.
I'm wearing my Star Wars Lego shirt. Yes. I think that's where he got that from.
Might be.
So, yeah, this is something that people have brought up on a couple of occasions, and I don't know. We never really talked about it. I think maybe we haven't talked about it yet simply because it was kind of sad.
Yeah, it's the story of Yahoo and what it is, how it became what it is. And it's rocky past, because this is one of those companies where, you know, there was a meteoric rise in this company and then a decline and then a sharper decline and then an era that was marked with lots of unpredictable change and uncertainty. And now.
Wait, what?
Yeah. And in 2012, just as things were really looking pretty grim, there's now a little optimism, at least about the possibility that this company could find its footing again. And it would help if we actually just start at the very beginning and just kind of work our way to present day, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And like with many of our tech stories, and that's been people and companies, there are these parallels, these weird, uncanny parallels that pop up. So,
and not just parallels, but relationships as well.
Yeah. It's funny because on a podcast where we were talking about a couple other guys in this similar role, we're going to start this story with two guys who met at Stanford University in California and started a major web property.
Yeah. So,
but not that one. Another one.
Yeah. So one of those is David Filo,
mm-hmm.
and the other is Jerry Young.
And I really like the website's original name.
Oh, yes. It was Jerry and David's Guide to the World Wide Web?
Yes.
That's pretty snappy.
Yeah, well, they certainly wouldn't have been able to fit it in that jingle that you were yes. just so accurately singing.
Yeah, that would have been very different. No, I was so off. I don't think I even hit a single note.
I was just being nice.
Oh, thank you. Anyway, so yes, Young and Filo at the time were both in the PhD program at Stanford University.
Electrical engineering.
That's correct. And they decided to start a personal project. They were both interested in the World Wide Web, which in 94 was still very, very young.
Yes.
You know, you got to remember that 94, the web, in fact, was maybe what, like 2 years old, more
maybe.
Or less?
There wasn't much of the web back then.
Because the web and the internet, are two different things. The web mm-hmm. is built on top of the internet. So the web is just one way that we access the internet and use the internet. Well, so in 94, there were some interesting websites that were around, and most of them were generated by either research facilities or students who were really interested in this new platform. There were a few companies that were kind of dipping their toe in the World Wide Web, but very few at this time.
This was the era where companies, if you walked into a corporate headquarters of some major company and said, why don't you start a site on the World Wide Web? You'll be one of the first. And they would go, first, what are you talking about?
And second, why would we do that?
Yeah, why would we ever spend the time and effort to do that?
And what would we do there?
Yeah. I mean,
because, you know, internet commerce didn't exist yet, at least as far as a World Wide Web entity.
Yeah.
But you started to see some stuff like the BBS culture, the bulletin board system culture kind
yeah.
of seep in, and Usenet culture as well. So yeah. this idea of groups of people who had similar interests forming communities online and building websites, or at least a web page, that represents that kind of interest. And Young and Filo both found lots of websites really interesting, and then they started to kind of curate this for themselves. Originally, mm-hmm. it was just for the two of them, really. They were kind of creating these categories of websites that they thought were interesting. And as the web grew, as more people began to add content to the web, these categories got larger and larger. So they started to break them into subcategories
mm-hmm.
so that they could easily find content that related to specific interests. And then they realized that their friends also thought this was a really useful tool. So they began to roll this out as more of a service, an idea of the web is this potentially limitless frontier,
mm-hmm.
which means that all the content you could ever want could exist there, but mm-hmm. finding it is going to be tough. Yahoo, which is ultimately the name that they settled on, would be a service that would allow you to find content that's relevant to your interests, and so that you don't have to just, you know, jump out into the World Wide Web and wander around aimlessly hoping that you find stuff that's relevant to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, this was you know, the search engines as we know them now didn't exist at that point.
Right.
So this was one of those things where I think it just sort of seemed obvious to them that it was an opportunity. So they dropped out of school.
Yeah.
Which is important to remember. Don't drop out of your PhD program, kids.
Right. So unless you're going to become a multi-billionaire.
Well, they did take a $2 million investment.
Well, and they
to start the company.
They came up with the name Yahoo, which is technically an acronym.
Is it?
Yes. Do you know what it stands for?
No.
Yet another hierarchical officious oracle.
Interesting.
That's according to the Yahoo website, by the way.
Oh, okay.
I would not have believed it had I not seen it on Yahoo itself.
Okay. Well, that's funny because I read that they were really excited about its definition.
Yes, this is also true. They I think the acronym was kind of a retroactive sort of thing. They liked the word Yahoo in the sense of the definition of it being kind of an uncouth or rude type of person, mm-hmm. as in the phrase, get a load of this Yahoo.
Yeah.
Serious.
Yeah. Well,
Yahoo
I mean,
serious.
these guys were, sort of informal. Well, I mean, it was the birth of the web. Was the birth of the web culture?
And
so,
yeah,
you know,
those early days of the web, people like, often
who
will,
are these guys?
They often equate the early days, they being people in general, being so vague. Some people refer to those early days of the web as like the digital equivalent of the Wild West. Like anything goes, and no rules were defined yet, so anything was possible.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, weren't their titles the Chief Yahoo?
Yes. And in 94, they also before the company had really become a company, it existed essentially on their own personal machines.
Yes.
Young had his was named Akebono, and Philo's was called Konoshiki. And both of these were named after sumo wrestlers.
Of course.
None of that is a joke. That is all true. This is, again, informing you behind of the personalities behind Yahoo and what sort of thing Yahoo started off as being versus what it would become, because it had a very interesting evolution. It started off as this very quirky approach to curating information that's on the web. And I think that had a lot of appeal among people of around the same age as Young and Philo, and younger, really, the age of people that we think of as being really internet savvy and passionate about the internet at the time, back in the early 90s. So they start pushing Yahoo, and by the fall of 94, this is not even a full year, right? Mm-hmm. They started in 94. By the fall of 94, Yahoo had word of Yahoo had spread beyond Stanford.
Yeah.
And it had become something of a go-to site for lots of people. And in the fall of 94, they had their first million hit day. So
it's impressive.
Yeah. Less than a year old in the early days of the web, when most people don't even know what the web is. Mm-hmm. It had, its first day to hit over a million hits. That actually boils down to about 100,000 unique visitors. So that meant that people would go to Yahoo multiple times in a day. So, you know, a unique visitor is one person. That's a unique visitor, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But a unique visitor can generate multiple hits by visiting the page several times.
Yes.
So that's the difference between those two. So 100,000 people essentially generating a million hits on Yahoo within the first year of it being a thing. And in 1995, in March, Yahoo made the step of incorporation.
Mm-hmm.
So it became an official company. That's when Young and Philo decided to skedaddle from the world of academe.
Yes. And they also hired someone to be the CEO.
Yes, because Young and Philo were not business guys. These guys were electrical engineer students.
Yeah.
So they said, you know, we need to get someone who knows the business side of running a corporation. We can handle technical stuff like crazy, but, you know, when it comes down to actual business decisions, we should get someone who really knows what they're doing. And so they hired a guy named Tim Kugel.
Mm-hmm.
And he was someone who came from Motorola. He had worked at Motorola. He was also a graduate of Stanford.
That will not be the last time we've heard the name of that academic institution before the end of this podcast.
And like Chris said, they did also secure $2 million in funding from Sequoia Capital.
Which seems small by today's standards, but, you know, it was a new thing. So.
Yeah, and the web was a young entity, and it was enough to get them going. They actually got a second round of funding in the fall of 95. And also they hired a guy named Jeffrey Mallett to be the chief operating officer. And Mallett came from Novell. He was actually out of their consumer division for a little product called WordPerfect.
I feel like I've heard of that somewhere.
Man. Okay. Short tangent. Just a short tangent, people. WordPerfect is to this day my favorite word processing program I've ever used. Specifically, WordPerfect 5.1 was great. WordPerfect 4.2 is what I cut my teeth on as far as word processing goes. It's sad to say that I still can remember the keyboard shortcuts to do things like bold and underline, spell check. and I have to stop myself from doing them whenever I'm using Word. Although I guess technically I think there is a way I can set it so that those old keystrokes are the same. You know, you can actually do that with some versions of Word anyway. I don't dare do that for fear of becoming too dependent upon it.
Yep.
Anyway, tangent over.
Okay, then.
So, yeah, that fall of 95, they get their second round of funding. Things are looking pretty good for this young startup. I mean, again, it started in 94. 95's looking up. And in 96, I mean, this is lightning fast, really, when you compare it to some of the other tech companies that are out there. Like, let's say Facebook, for example.
Mm-hmm.
96, April 96, they launch their IPO.
Yep.
The initial public offering. At that time, they had 49 employees. And when they launched the IPO, the stock price was valued at $13 a share. Now, Yahoo stock has had probably one of the most dramatic histories I've seen for a company that managed to survive some massive, massive problems.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So remember, this company launches well before the dot-com bubble burst.
Right.
Because that happened in 2001.
Well, I would say that Yahoo's meteoric rise probably was part of what built the tech bubble in the first place.
It definitely
not
helped,
by itself.
It definitely helped precipitate the bubble bursting because the valuation of Yahoo got out of hand. At its highest, from what I can tell, on January 3rd, 2000, stock was valued. Remember, it launched at $13 a share. On January 3rd, 2000, it was valued at $118.75 a share.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And keep in mind also that Yahoo stock, I think, has split 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
So that also is something to keep in mind. But then the lowest it was valued came just a year later in 2001. So in 2000, at its highest, $118.75 a share. At its mm-hmm. lowest, $4.05.
Wow.
In 2001. That's obviously after the bubble burst, the dot-com bubble burst, and this company that was worth a huge amount of money saw that value escape in just a few months' time. Currently, as of the recording of this podcast, which is in mid-August 2012,
mm-hmm.
it's valued at $14.99 per share. So over what its initial public offering was, but nowhere close to its peak. I mean,
but post-splits.
Post-splits, yeah, you have to figure that in too. But $100 less than at its peak is a big deal.
Yeah. But they were definitely – Jerry and David were definitely on to something because within 2 years of their – you know, being engineering students, all of a sudden they were multimillionaires.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. You gotta, you know, getting back to the mid 90s when this IPO goes out. Yeah. They were definitely riding high. I mean, their company was a success, and they continued to build on it. They weren't, you know, just curating content. They started to add more services. They created the Yahoo.com personalized homepage approach, the yeah. My Yahoo
yeah.
approach.
So they sort of became one of the earliest portals because you'd get your news and your weather
exactly.
based on where you were.
Very good, yeah. A portal being like you know, your snapshot view of what is going on the web and in the world on any given day.
Yeah,
so go ahead.
A portal, you know, like a door. So it was your door to the internet.
Yeah. And this is very similar to what companies had been doing for a while. The, you know, we talked about it in our other podcasts, things like AOL, what mm-hmm. AOL
yeah.
was doing. So you would get your connection to the internet through AOL, and AOL would create this portal that was kind of, again, a snapshot as AOL saw it of what was going on in the web and in the world. And that was your initial introduction to the internet on any given day. And then you could explore on your own as much as you liked, but this was sort of a starting point. Well, that's the same thing Yahoo was doing, and it was seeing a lot of early success with that.
Yeah, the biggest difference here was that AOL was still proprietary in its own network and not hooked up to the internet, while
yeah.
Yahoo was on the internet itself.
Yeah, it was so browser-based as opposed to
yeah.
you know, computer-based. Yes, and then also they started to introduce something that would become incredibly influential on the web. One of the most influential acts ever, I would say, which is that they really were pioneers with web advertising.
Yes.
They became a platform for web ads. And this is kind of the foundation for the way many companies make money using the web. I mean, there are several different ways to generate revenue on the web. And some of it is involving like commerce, you know, essentially using the web as sort of a catalog,
mm-hmm.
the way you could argue Amazon does. Amazon also offers a lot of services that you can subscribe to either as a customer or as a corporate customer. They generate revenue that way as well. So it's not just through being sort of a retail or a catalog kind of approach, but web advertising is a major way that companies make money on the internet. And Yahoo was again, the pioneer in those early days of defining, what web advertising is. In fact, Yahoo would even eventually do studies that would help show a connection between web advertising and real world effects.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, showing that web advertising can have an effect in guiding someone's consumer choices.
Mm-hmm.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, they were very effective at creating content that would get people to the website, and it makes sense that, you know, you would be able to go up to a company who might want to advertise and say, look, I know for a fact I'm going to have 50,000 people on this page because I get 50,000 people to visit this page every day.
Yeah.
And now you can advertise
if you wanna, on this page. If you want access to, at max, 100,000 eyes.
Yes.
Then, yeah. But, and that was a powerful story to say, look, we have the – we can tell you how many people looked at this. And if your ad is on this page – people will see it. Whereas if you put an ad in a magazine or on a billboard, you don't know if people, if their eyes ever even glanced across it. But we can tell you if they saw it or not because we know if they came to the page. It's a pretty powerful story.
Yep. Not everyone bought into it immediately.
No, it actually took some time to really get traction. But once there were some early success stories, that was – that the writing was on the wall that web advertising was going to be the future for generating revenue on the web.
Well, within 3 years, by 1999, the total market value of the company was more than $100 billion.
Yeah.
So it made some waves.
So 1 year before that, in 98, they went ahead and established internet guides in Chinese and in Spanish. So it becomes a global entity. And in fact, we're going to have some interesting discussion about China in a little bit.
But, yeah.
In 99, like Chris was saying, the valuation of the company was over $100 billion. That was also the year that Yahoo made two major acquisitions. I think both of these were in our podcast about some of the bad deals that have happened.
Yeah.
One of them was GeoCities, which seemed like a brilliant idea at the time because that's where a lot of people had built home pages.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the early days of when people would create a digital presence on the web. This is before blogging. It's before anything like Tumblr or social networks.
Yep.
So at the time, that was kind of how people thought, oh, well, if I want to create something that's about me, I have to have a website.
Yeah.
Nowadays, that's not the case. People use other platforms and then they talk about themselves at length that way. If you want to hear about me, follow me at John Strickland, Twitter. There you go. Because I'll talk about myself all day long. They also bought another company, and this was probably – I think this topped our list of bad deals.
Oh, yes.
Which was Broadcast.com. Now, Yahoo has a history of looking at ways of marrying other form of media with the web or getting into businesses that are beyond just – curating content for the web or even generating content. And that included Broadcast.com. Now, this acquisition did do something. It made Mark Cuban a billionaire.
I was going to say it affected the sports the sports world substantially because it gave Mark Cuban enough money to buy teams and get himself fined for ridiculous
amounts. Gave
money
to a real maverick.
Oh.
And then a lot of other mavericks too. But broadcast, Yahoo ultimately was not really able to do much with Broadcast. It did absorb some of the technology that Broadcast had developed into other parts of Yahoo. But Broadcast.com itself and the identity it had created ceased to be before much longer. And it a lot of people cite the Yahoo Broadcast deal as one of the most short-sighted, unwise deals, especially when you look at how many users were subscribed essentially to Broadcast.com, because it was one of those deals where the amount of money paid per user was astronomical. Like it would have been cheaper to just go to every single person who had ever visited Broadcast.com and give them a check for $1,000. That would have been less expensive than buying Broadcast for what they did. That 99 definitely had a couple of questionable acquisitions in it. Although, again, really we have the benefit of hindsight. At the time,
seem quite so silly.
Yeah, 99, again, this is when the bubble's still inflating, right? The bubble has not burst yet. People just thought that the web was limitless as far as not just for content, but for the possibility of making money. And that, no one really knew where the web was going, but everyone was really excited. So in hindsight, we could say like, whoops, bad idea. But at the time, no way of knowing.
Well, Yahoo actually sort of gave rise to another similar but not exactly the same type of website.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you're talking about a meeting that happened in 2000, aren't you?
Well, yes. But I was kind of going to preface that meeting – by saying, people would visit Yahoo to find other websites.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, for a while, they had a print magazine, Yahoo Internet Life. I remember it. You used to be able to see it on the newsstand. My father got into getting online, he was a subscriber, so he could find websites. And that was kind of interesting. One of the nice things about doing things the way Yahoo did was it was done primarily by hand. I mean, people would actually go online, see what something was about, maybe give it a little write-up. Hey, visited this website. It's kind of neat. You can do this and that and the other thing on it. But you know, doing that by hand is time consuming. And this is when we started talking about the search engine, which would use primarily software. There were lots of them around that time, like AltaVista and Hotbot, and another site started by two guys who met at Stanford University.
Yeah, a site that rhymes with Schmoogle.
Yes, or Kugel.
Or Kugel, yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't lost on me either.
So, yeah,
one Google, letter off.
Yeah. Page and Brin, Larry Page and Sergey Brin.
Yeah, they started after Yahoo did.
Like, yeah, they started after Yahoo did, and they took a different approach. Yahoo was all about curating data.
Yes.
Curating websites and kind of categorizing stuff. Google was a different sort of search engine where mm-hmm. it was, you know, you told Google what it was you were looking for. It crawled the web and gave you the results that that according to its algorithm were the most relevant to your search.
Yes.
And
there wasn't really human curation going on. It would just tell you whether or not what you found was relevant to what you looked for.
Right. And Page and Brin had approached Yahoo with a request for some cash infusions early on in the days of Google. That was one of the different companies that they approached to try and get a little bit of support when they were doing their early work. And in 2000, Yahoo made an interesting decision. They decided to they saw the power of Google's search algorithm.
Yes.
You know, and they admired it, and so Yahoo paid a licensing fee to Google for an agreement, a deal that would last 4 years that would allow Yahoo to use Google's search algorithm on Yahoo's site. So beyond just curating content for people, by people, they would also use Google's search algorithm to search the web for other content that wasn't necessarily something that a human being had curated for you. And
in hindsight, kind of a brilliant decision in a way, because it gave them the power of Google's search, and that augmented their human curated content and theoretically would bring more people to Yahoo.
The only problem was that people started to realize that this Google-powered search engine was exactly what they wanted, and some people began to just bypass Yahoo entirely, go straight to Google. Google was such a different experience because Yahoo, again, is a portal, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you've got busy is the wrong word, but elaborate web presentation that has lots of different elements to it. Google, we're all familiar with Google's homepage. It is stripped down. It is just the bare necessities, not unattractive, but not cluttered in any way or there's no extraneous information. There's
it's
a
functional.
Search bar, there's a logo, and there's just a little bit of text, and that's it. Yeah, it's functional. So people would start to bypass Yahoo, go straight to Google and say, well, you know, I could just go here and find what I need. I remember these days. All right. I remember the days when, I distinctly remember when I was part of a message board. Actually, it was the Snopes message board. I've been on Snopes forever. But I remember people on Snopes saying, you know what? This Google search engine is so much faster and so much more comprehensive than anything else out there. That's what I use. And that's what got me interested in using Google. And that's, I very much agreed.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And so Yahoo's decision to license this technology may also have hurt Yahoo in the long run, because people began to discover Google when otherwise they may never have heard of it. Mm-hmm. And Yahoo had sort of created a monster. Yahoo had sort of, they had been a pioneer in the web advertising space. Google showed a fair amount of innovation in that space.
Mm-hmm.
Would dominate it in such a way as to frighten everybody else for the rest of time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's phenomenal what Google did. Google looked at what Yahoo was doing and said, let's apply the same logic we did with our algorithm for search and create a tool that's going to give people who want to advertise on the web way more information and control and analytics than they've ever had before. And we're going to do it better than anyone else. And that's, you can argue how successful they were in accomplishing that goal, but they definitely saw results. For one thing, just Google AdWords, they could tell you, hey, we ran this ad and we found out that if we ran the ad using this word as the trigger as opposed to this word as the trigger, we had a 78% increase in success.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're like, how did you – that's insane amount of control for an ad.
Yeah.
You've gotten down to the granular level of control where you can scientifically engineer the most powerful ad possible using the material you have. That's a story that's incredibly powerful. Anyway, so Yahoo ends up giving this boost to Google because they licensed the technology. That will end up hurting them in the long run.
A smart move that turns out to be a dumb one as well.
In 2001, that's when the bottom fell out. That's the bubble burst. That's when that stock price plummeted from its all-time high to its all-time low.
Mm-hmm. I had forgotten, too, that before the bubble really had burst terribly, that Yahoo really kind of had a chance to get eBay.
Yes.
But didn't.
Yes. Actually, there's a lot of stories about Yahoo having a chance to do something but not doing it.
Well, that was when they didn't purchase eBay.
Yeah. Yeah. There's going to be some more didn'ts down the line. But there's also at that point, so the valuation of the company went from over $100 billion to around $10
billion. Wow. That's enough. Okay. That's still quite a bit of money.
Yeah. But still, it's a huge drop. I mean, shareholders not happy.
Well, the companies that didn't survive the dot-com crash, by and large, had poor business models.
Yeah.
They weren't really based in reality. And Yahoo, I mean, advertising is pretty well based in reality. You know, they weren't really suffering. That hurts, losing, nine-tenths of your value, but...
And it definitely shook shareholder confidence severely to the point where Kugel ends up resigning.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's not a big surprise. You're talking about such an incredible drop that it would have been amazing had the CEO not resigned.
Yeah.
And a new CEO steps in, Terry Semel,
mm-hmm.
who came from a totally different world. He did not come from the world of the web or technology. He came from the world of Hollywood. He was a co-CEO, which, you know, you don't hear that too frequently. He was a co-CEO and chairman of a little media company called Warner Brothers, but not the Warner sister dot.
Yes.
So he was a co-CEO of Warner Brothers. He comes on as the new CEO for Yahoo. Yahoo also acquires a company called Hot Jobs.
I remember that.
Yeah, sort of
a monster.
It's an online job posting service where you could search for jobs and post jobs online. This was Semel. There was a lot of speculation and a lot of skepticism that he would be able to effectively lead a company when he himself was admittedly not from the technological world. In fact, there were stories about how he didn't use email. I mean, he was just not a technology guy, but he did have an understanding of how businesses work. Now, it was not always in a successful endeavor with Yahoo, but he did manage to turn Yahoo around from this rock bottom level that they had hit after the bubble burst, and he managed to keep it afloat. And so in 2002, he had a meeting with those two upstarts who were running Google, the company that was furnishing the search algorithm that Yahoo was using. And in 2002, they were talking at that time about the possibility of an acquisition and how different would the world be if Yahoo had acquired Google at that time. I mean, it's hard to think about, because think about all the stuff Google does that's well beyond just search engines. And if Yahoo had acquired Google, would that corporate culture have existed? Would we have a driverless car made by Google? Would we have,
Google Glasses?
Project Glass. Yeah. I mean, not to mention just all the other stuff that Google does, Google Docs and Gmail. I mean, a lot of this stuff would probably have been created at Yahoo in some form or another, but it definitely would have taken a different path. Well, Brin and Page could not come to any agreement with Semel. And that was partially because it was really hard to value Google.
Yeah.
And it all depends on whom you ask. How much money was offered. I heard $1 billion, but then Page and Brin asked for $3 billion. I also heard that there was a $3 billion offer, but Page and Brin then said $5 billion. So it almost sounds like Page and Brin kind of just didn't want to sell. Like they felt that might be the wrong choice. And then there's also the argument of maybe they were just trying to feel out how much their company was worth. I don't know all the details. And in fact, a lot of the information I found conflicted with other information I found. So it's just speculation on my part at this point. But ultimately, Yahoo did not purchase Google. And I know there was an entire article in Wired that said that was the biggest mistake that Semel made throughout his tenure at Yahoo, was that he did not jump on the chance of acquiring Google, because Google continued to grow in popularity and, in fact, would ultimately dominate web search and Yahoo's share of the web search market would start to shrink as Google's began to be the the vast majority of web search. Mm-hmm. All the other little web search engines out there were reduced to just the tiniest user bases in comparison.
At least in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. In the United States. That's a good qualifier, in the United States.
You know, occasionally we, believe it or not, we go on a little long about subjects. And I think that sort of was
not so.
And that actually was the case with this episode on Yahoo. We ended up with so much material that we ended up splitting it into two episodes. Which we didn't know at the time, so surprise.
Yeah.
But so we're gonna wrap it up here, and you can tune in for our second episode on Yahoo in the 2000s. So make sure to tune in for that.
Yeah, and if you have any suggestions for future topics that Chris and I should tackle in other episodes of Tech Stuff, perhaps other topics so large that after we record it, we realize that's too long for any human being to endure. Let's split that up again. Let us know. You can send us a message on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is TechStuffHSW, or shoot us an email. Our address is TechStuff@discovery.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again about Yahoo, as it turns out, really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.